Of course, the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. I'm going to start off this show by talking a little bit about a consistent message and back over something really simple to keep reminding you guys of how simple this stuff is. In America, there's this group of pink rabbits, very famous. They're little warmongers called the neocons. Neoconservative. And they're about as conservative as a Bolshevik, but that's another story for another day. But they have been on a consistent message nonstop, and it's a complete lie. Ahmadinejad says he's going to wipe Israel off the map. Ahmadinejad says he's going to wipe Israel off the map. Ahmadinejad says he's going to wipe Israel off the map. That's not exactly what he said. What he said is something like Zionism is going to be wiped off the map. I won't go into it exactly what he said. That's kind of irrelevant. You can go to davidduke.com. He talked about this extensively. And this is a lie. It's a sleight of hand. And I've talked all about Iran and the war coming with Iran and stuff like that because they want war with Iran. But anyways, it doesn't matter that it's not true. What matters is they have a big media soapbox. A big media soapbox, and they're willing to repeat something over and over and over again. Neocons are very good. You know, you can accuse the Jews of being a lot of things, but being lazy isn't one of them. They're very, very hardworking. When it comes to the basics, when it comes to consistent message, they will be on it night and day. The problem I have with it is it's a lie. But that's another story for another day. It doesn't matter that it's a lie if you're willing to repeat it. It just doesn't matter. And now, of course, a huge percentage of America think Iran is going to wipe Israel off the map. A huge percentage of Europe thinks that Iran is going to wipe Israel off the map. That's not exactly what he says. Anyone that does their homework realizes that. But it doesn't work that way. If someone's willing to repeat a lie over and over again, that lie can become truth in the eyes of the public. This is the danger of a consistent message. Is it that simple? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, over and over again, you've seen this stuff work, but then people turn around and doubt that it works. You know, Horace, we don't have a big enough media soapbox. Well, you have a huge media soapbox online. You have Stormfront. You have all these other things. Seriously. You have a couple runner-up for Stormfront, like White News Now. But you can have the biggest media soapbox in the world. The neocons can be on Fox News every day. If they're not on message, if they're not trying to get a message across in very simple memes, they're not going to be effective. They're not going to go anywhere. It's the basics. It's so simple, most people don't get it. Now, we have two simple talking points that are duplicatable. For instance, the neocons, anyone can say, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. That's very duplicatable. Most people are not going to be argue for it intensely. They can argue about it. They can manipulate his statements at the UN. They can manipulate his statements when he meets with Pakistan. They can manipulate his statements when he meets with China. Most people aren't going to be able to do that. Most rabbits are just going to be out there. They're going to be impressioned by the fact that they've said it over and over again, and they're going to repeat it. Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. We're just looking to do the same thing, but with the truth. We're not looking to lie. We're looking to say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. We're not looking to get out, to have people, everyone argue some extensive white nationalist, paleo-conservative positions. That's not duplicatable. The neocons cannot duplicate someone being able to argue Ahmadinejad talking about Israel, going to wipe Israel off the map 8 ways to Sunday. The only thing they're looking to duplicate is that simple meme. Iran is looking to wipe Israel off the map. They're getting nuclear weapons. All we're looking to duplicate is, you know, Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody. That's a simple mantra, a simple meme to be duplicated. Now, to have someone out there be able to argue the mantra, right now on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, you can go on the front of my on my blog roll, go down to WhitakerOnline.org, old Bob's blog, Bob Whitaker's blog, you'll see Bug Swarm. That's what it is. It's called Bug Swarm now. and that is people arguing all over the internet, mantra positions. That takes a little bit of skill. That takes a little bit of effort. But at the same time, we have very simple things that everyone can do. And there's a correlation to how these things are done. Now, how many people are going to be able to defend themselves? A lot more than are going to be able to argue intensely on Bug Swarm. How many people are going to be able to say, in fact, anyone can say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Anyone white can say that. If you say it, they'll learn to say it. It's no different than any of the other positions. It's no different than the neocons and their nonsense of Iran is going to wipe Israel off the map. If you repeat it enough, they'll repeat it. They'll learn it. They'll repeat it. Then there's another, a shortened mantra. Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody. If you say it enough, everyone will say it. That's it. That's how you get the truth out. It's that simple. It's a lot of hard work, but it's that simple. And the question is, and this is a good question. It was just recently. I've had a bit of problem with new people that want to learn using the mantra in action. When I point them to the White Rabbit radio shows, the shows are too numerous and they get overwhelmed. Can you come with suggestions on how to get new people up and running ASAP? Perhaps edit some fragments of your shows into a couple of hours for those who want to hammer on pink rabbits. Make a starter package for new rabbits so they can join us faster. A boot camp for mantra, awaken white rabbits, etc. Suggestions welcome. And this is you know, someone, this is from Iceland Creator, who's heavyweight. He's a heavyweight in Iceland. He's on the mantra night and day, and he's trying to get new people up and running fast, up to his speed. The fact of the matter is Iceland Creator put in a lot of effort to come up to speed. Iceland Creator, you can easily teach people duplicatable strategies, like, in your opinion, I'm a racist, you're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. You can give them a shortened mantra that's totally duplicatable. You know, Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody. You can even do other versions of it. You know, Muslim countries for the Muslims, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody. But getting someone to go on Bug Swarm and learn the different techniques, and that's what it has to happen. You have to listen to, in my particular podcast, all you got to do is listen to the Truck Roy interviews and get on Bug Swarm and learn. But that can't be done by osmosis. That takes some amount of effort. And don't expect the average white rabbit to do that. There are two types of listeners I have. Those that first start that say, boy, I got a lot of podcasts. And those that have listened to me for 6 months or 7 months or more and think that I don't have anywhere near enough podcasts. I can't win for that. But I don't have that much material up there. It does take some amount of effort to want to learn. It's kind of like if you want to be a baby neocon, you can easily say Iran is going to wipe. Ahmadinejad says Iran is going to wipe Israel off the map. You can easily do that as a baby neocon. But getting on Fox News and arguing, getting online and arguing this point from Eight Ways of Sunday, this lie, that takes some effort. That's not going to be done by osmosis. You've got to get out there and work at it. And you have to want to work at it. For instance, I don't want to lie for the neocons. Well, that doesn't interest me. But getting on Bug Swarm, learning like you did, learning how to use this in a variety of different ways, developing your own technique, that takes a little bit of effort, but at the same time, you can give them something to use every single day, 1,000 times a day, that will make a difference. It's how it works. You see this stuff work every day, and that's how it does work. There's no magic to it. It's just repetition. Now, of course, we're not lying about anything. We're pointing out the obvious over and over again. But there are no shortcuts. Listening to the Truck Roy interview and getting on Bug Swarm is a pretty good shortcut to getting up to speed. You certainly can use the simple ones. Anyone, white, alive, can say Africa for the Africa, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everybody. Anyone alive can say it. It's very duplicatable. Just like anyone alive can say, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. You know, Iran is going to wipe Israel off the map. They're going to get nuclear weapons. Anyone can run around and shout that neocon lie. But there's only a handful. They're going to want to take it to that next level. You've got to understand that. You've got to understand that. And there are no real shortcuts to that. It can't be done by osmosis. This isn't, you know, you can't hook them up to a machine and just impart all that information. unfortunately. But if you keep plugging along, they will come along. There's going to be some that grab the podcast or grabs Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar and read everything there and listen to everything. And there's going to be some that just want a basic technique to repeat to defend themselves. That's what makes it up. I mean, coming into this, I knew that that's what the prospects were. The ideal is to build a core group to be on Bug Swarm. But that's all it takes. I don't need more than one Iceland creator in Iceland running around on the mantra. Now, if you get 100 of them, that's fantastic. But I think you're asking for a lot from the average white rabbit. I know it's tragic, but, you know, we're a race of specialists. We're a race of specialists, and they're all over the map. But just keep it simple and keep plugging away. And certain percentage will go through the numbers. They will go through, and they will end up being on Bug Swarm. Starting this podcast, there was only a handful on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminars doing anything regarding consistent message. That's all it took to get it going. And then, of course, it picked up speed from listeners of my podcast and those others that wanted to know what the buzz was and how to use it. But that has to be done by, it's just a learning experience. There is no real shortcuts. The only shortcut we have really are the Truck Roy interviews and getting on Bug Swarm. Bug Swarm is a great place because, of course, you can see all the different styles and all the different arguments going forward. There's only a handful of key points our enemies really have, and they are as follows. Yeah, our enemy will always say one of the basic five. And Bob has talked about this to no end, old Bob Whitaker, denying there is such a thing as white people, screaming about how evil white people are, justifying genocide, wishing for genocide, and of course, saying that we would not be allowed to speak because I'm an evil man. Evil white rabbit. It's the same old, same old. There's nothing new. It's just a matter of getting used to defending yourself and how far you want to take it. But as long as you make your point and you're teaching people how to make your point, you're doing what the neocons do to dominate their soapbox. Again, you can have the biggest soapbox in the world. You can have Stormfront. You can have all these different forums. But if you're not on a consistent message, it doesn't matter if you're a neocon. It doesn't matter if you're a white nationalist. You're not going anywhere. The neocons don't go anywhere without their consistent messages. We're just opposed to them because they're lying all the time. They're trying to wipe us out. But that's another story for another day, right? The consistent message doesn't matter if it's a lie. There's a whole group of anti-white activists. They think they're anti-racist, but they're just anti-white. That we're talking about this on YouTube. I caught it on one of the segments on Bug Swarm. One of the anti-whites came on and says, well, it really doesn't matter if they're willing to repeat it. Of course, there's no attempt at genocide against the white race. They're arguing their nonsense. But he goes on to say that if they're willing to repeat this all the time, it's gonna make it more difficult, because that's all it takes is to repeat it. They don't understand their own success at the bottom. But that is typical. So being a baby neocon is very easy. Repeating a simple meme is very easy and very duplicatable. You've seen this happen over a very short period of time from a big soapbox, Fox News. But being a big neocon, being able to argue different positions, well, that takes a little effort, and that's not done by osmosis. It's not done by osmosis. But I can show you the steps, and you can show them the steps, but only a certain percentage is going to walk through it. But the good news is, that's all you need. That's all you need is a certain percentage, and teach them how to defend themselves, and to teach them the simple memes. That's it. You can't hope to get everyone up and coming at your speed that quickly. Only a handful are ever going to want to be there. Any more than the neocons can hope to have someone argue Ahmadinejad's position from the UN that he's going to wipe Israel off the map with nuclear weapons and to spin it this way and to spin it that way. They can't hope for that. They don't look for that. They only have a handful doing that. But that's the basics. That's the basics. Now on to the next topic. You know, when we first started this conversation, I don't know, when was it? A year and a half, 2 years ago maybe now? America was at war in two countries. We're at war in Afghanistan, and we're at war in Iraq. Now we're at war in four countries, five countries, barking on Syria, and that's a trend in place. A trend in place toward a very, very, very large war. From North Africa all the way into Central Asia. It just gets bigger every day with what these crazy fools are going to do. We're going to talk for a bit about this. One last thing before we go into WW3. Every once in a while, when in regards to consistent message, this particular consistent message, there's been about a few people who want actual documents from the Bilderbergers or actual documents from the Rockefellers or Rothschilds. I mean, right now, it's kind of obvious. You got Tim Weiss and all those think tanks he represents calling for genocide. He's been doing it for quite some time, rather explicitly. You got Noel Ignatieff at Harvard, PhD at Harvard, calling for white genocide. Basically, pretty explicit. Despite what they try to hide around in 2011, it's pretty explicit. You have the White Genocide Project with huge numbers of quotes. Huge numbers of quotes. You know, you got General Wesley Clark, head of NATO, who bombs white countries and only white countries, or bombs white Christian Serbia and makes the statement that there's no room for an ethnic state in Europe. I mean, he's only saying that in Europe. You don't have to worry about defining white with someone doing that. He's defining it for you as he bombs white Christian Serbs. But there's always a type that wants exact document, some high-level document or something really over the top. And they're usually emailing me or emailing Bob. There's only a few out there. They think it'll make some powerful presentation or something like that. And my response is quite simple. You have immigration into white countries and only white countries. You have forced intermarriage or an attempt to force intermarriage through the media into white countries and only white countries. It's massively documented on anti-white media. There's even on my blog roll, there's several that'll document this type of thing. You have forced integration into white countries and only white countries. No freedom of association is allowed under the law, like Marin County, California, and there's several examples of this across Europe. And then, of course, they promote a brown future in white countries and only white countries. You have some pretty high-level, all kinds of high-level quotes and whatnot. But that's not enough for some people. Some people have to have exact quote to think this is binding. And what I would tell those people historically is this isn't for you. Because by the time that comes out in this particular type of situation, either that's going to come out in the beginning, if it's not already out, if there's not some video from Bilderbergers in 1958 or something, if that's not already out, then that's not going to come out until the end. All right, and you have a Reagan staffer, on Stormfront putting kids on a consistent message, a former Reagan staffer who knows a little bit about politics and consistent messages and practical politics especially. He's been around a while in Washington and so on and so forth. That should be enough to tell you something. If that's not already out, don't worry about it coming out, because it will come out. That's not your job. Your job is to be on a consistent message, or don't be. Move on to something else. Don't bug me over it, and don't bug Bob over it, because we're doing what we're told. I'm just putting you on a consistent message, and old Bob is just putting out a consistent message. If that's not already out, that ain't coming out right now. And in this type of scenario, if it's not out already, it's not coming out until the end, and then they don't need my podcast. No one needs my podcast. No one needs old Bob. No one needs anything. It's over with. Done with. So that's what I'll say about need some high-level official, as if you don't have enough information already, but I need some high-level official to make some powerful presentation. That will make everything perfect. Well, by the time everything's perfect, it's over with. And I've never seen any paleoconservative or white nationalist with a high-powered presentation really change a whole lot, because you got to incorporate some type of consistent message. Consistent messages change a whole lot. That's the only thing that changes things. Neocons, like I just pointed out to you, neocons do nothing but a consistent message. They don't do high-powered presentations. All they do is bullshit. Seriously, they lie. And lie. Pardon the French, but that's all they do is lie. And you know, you see what works time and time again, but then you want to go back to doing what doesn't work. You want to go back to something that has never once changed anything. It looks nice. I love watching them. We all love watching them. But it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. And no, it won't make a consistent message more effective. You have a tremendous amount of evidence out there to help a consistent message. I mean, it's just overwhelming. What you have to do is point out the obvious time and time again. Having Rockefeller on video saying he's going to wipe out the white race, what more does that... I mean, it's basically that blatant now. And the idea that that's going to help make a more powerful presentation is simply absurd. It's a consistent message, and you have more than enough evidence. By the time that comes out, it's over with, done with, and they don't need you. And if you actually need something like that, this wouldn't be for you, because the approach they're taking has not been to release something that explicit out of the beginning, simply probably because it wasn't necessary. The only people that would be necessary for, even in white nationalism, there's only a handful that, I gotta see that before I believe a consistent message. I gotta see that before I believe genocide. I gotta see Rockefeller himself talking to Abe Foxy Foxman about genociding our race. Other than that, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. If you gotta go that far, that person is worthless. In regards to consistent message, they may be wonderful to their wife and kids. They may be brilliant at PowerPoint presentations. They may be a brilliant engineer at their job, but they're no good for our struggle in regards to consistent message. And that's it. That's the end all be all to, I gotta have absolute evidence. You have more than enough for any type of powerful presentation. But powerful presentations don't get it done. What gets it done is a consistent message. Now, if you can incorporate the two, fine. But there are no explicit quotes that have been any more explicit than what's already out there. And what's already out there is overwhelming. But there are no big gotcha quotes that have been released yet. The major gotcha quotes, you know, like George W. Bush saying he's going to wipe out the white race or something like that. That hasn't been made available yet. When it does get made available in this particular instance, it'll be over with, done with. And there may be a few twists and turns we don't see. So either be on a consistent message or come on board or don't, but you're not going to have that type of information. And we have found out, I found out, that if someone needs all that, thinking they need some powerful presentation, you don't. You don't. If someone say they need all that, generally when you give them that type of information, they still don't deliver the goods anyways. So, it is basically a numbers game. Some will, some won't, so what? You gotta move forward, and it all starts with repetition. And I realize there are some people on a consistent message, they want that type of information just for their records or just for a document. Well, everyone does. But by the time in this struggle, and the way this is laid out, by the time that comes out, it's over with, done with, and this one may have a few more twists and turns that you don't see. You don't yet see. So that's a little bit on that. If it's not out there already, or if it's not been dug up already, being dug up already, it ain't coming out right now. There are no KGB files being released right now that I know of. When it does come out, believe me, you'll see it. But in this type of thing, I'm going to say it one more time, by the time it comes out, they don't need a podcast putting people on a consistent message. They don't need anything because it's over with. It's done with. And that's that. That's that. Now on to World War III. When this podcast first started, we were at war. The United States was at war, at least in a what you see is what you get fashion. With just Iraq and Afghanistan. They're pretty much at war with everyone behind the scenes, and they're, of course, whoever they are. Team Pink Rabbit is at war, with all white rabbits, right? That's what white rabbit genocide is all about. But they were at war with two countries. Being at war means bombing them, trying to change something, trying to fool around with them. Iraq and Afghanistan, that's kind of obvious. Now it's kind of obvious that war has expanded. There's a trend in place. And a trend means there should be more wars going on. And, of course, as of right now, there are war in Iraq, Afghanistan. They're bombing Libya, but they're not at war. They're trying to remove Gaddafi, so they say. But they're not at war. They're bombing Yemen. They're not at war. They're bombing the edges of Pakistan and doing all kinds of stuff in Pakistan on any given day. But there's basically a war going on with five countries, and at any given time, it will escalate. But this trend is in place, and we're going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about some current news. There's nothing really new if you're looking at the trend. The difference is that a lot of people across the board are realizing that from the looks of it right now, at least, with the current trend in place, with the aircraft carriers around the Mediterranean, with the big missile interceptors in the Mediterranean, with what's going on in the Straits of Hormuz, and all the big machinations that there's going to be a war from North Africa all the way into Central Asia, Pakistan and all that. And it has the look of a huge, huge war. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen that way. They could jump the train off the tracks and go with some different scenarios, but as of right now, obviously, there's you know, no change equals no change. And we're gonna jump around and we're gonna talk about some events after the fact and we're gonna move around the world. There's nothing any major news except a lot of games being played, obviously. We have, you know, there was a big thing over the 1967 borders with Israel. We have something going on here which is kind of unprecedented. We have the whole entire planet getting ready to recognize the Palestinian state. Now, that doesn't really mean anything to Israelis. It doesn't mean anything to Bibi Netanyahu. Bibi Netanyahu is going to war. Bibi Netanyahu is busy testing out his nuclear facility. Yeah, Israeli leaders test nuclear bunker and defense drill. And this is the first test Netanyahu's done in his first new nuclear bunker, and this is June 22nd. So, hindsight, if you're testing out your nuclear bunkers and going through all these missile drills because you're getting ready to launch a war or have something going on with the war, if you're doing your neocon destabilization strategy all over the Middle East, which is the plan they're going with. Yeah, the big bamboozle consists of the neocon destabilization strategy. It's not a democracy strategy. They're trying to destabilize everything. They want everything like Yemen, complete chaos. With exception of Israel. You know, they want Israel in place, but complete chaos all around them. If you're going with that strategy, talking about peace deals in 1967 borders doesn't matter either way. But it does to the pink rabbit. It does to a section of the pink rabbits behind Obama. It matters because they don't want to be isolated in the world. You know, the Netanyahus really don't care. They think they're fighting the world anyways. On the other hand, they have some teammates that do care. They do care what it looks like. And so Obama comes out and proposes this pretty modest proposal, return to the 67 borders, which even Stratfor, even the famous Stratfor, which is backed by some Jewish thinkers, believe that's the only defensible borders for Israel. There's a shocker. But they go back to this, which plenty of Israeli prime ministers talk about, and it's a pretty moderate deal. And Netanyahu blows a fit. Well, if you're planning on going to war, there's no sense in talking peace. You've got to have your people prepared to fight. If you've got if they've got drills going on there every other day, Jew rabbits run into bunkers every day over these drills, over these missile drills that they've been having. They've got all kinds of crazy stuff going on there. What's the point in talking about some peace? You want to look tough. You want to come across that way. But for Team Pink Rabbit, for the Jimmy Carter set, they don't want to be isolated in the world. They don't want to be the only ones left in the world not recognizing the Palestinian state. What happens if the whole entire world recognizes the Palestinian state but Israel and America? They don't want to be put in that position. And so they come out on this 1967 borders deal. In hindsight, vision's always 20/20. It also lends itself to the truth. It was a big scam. It was a big scam, in my opinion. They don't want it. By proposing the 1967 deals, it makes it look like they're going for peace, when in fact they got this huge destabilization effort across the Middle East, which is being headed by the Hans Sabin and all the neocons and all the Israeli firsters. They're all in on this deal, the plan they went under in the Middle East. It's a destabilization plan, or the neocon destabilization plan, on steroids. But they didn't want it to look like they were necessarily on that side, so they came out for the 1967 borders deal, make it seem like they're moderate, make it seem like a peace deal, because if it came to a vote at the UN, it would be a diplomatic nightmare, and the Jimmy Carter set doesn't really like that image. They don't want that to be their image. They certainly don't want it to be the image for America, but that's become the image of America, hasn't it? And so that's what that show's all about. They don't want that to come to a vote, because if it comes to a vote, it's kind of a nightmare. What happens if the whole entire world recognizes a Palestinian state but America and Israel? I mean, it basically annihilates America's diplomacy power on the planet, which has already been annihilated. You know, it is basically the whole entire world flipping off America and flipping off Israel. What they want is war. What they want is destabilization. The biggest problem for Israel is if all the Egyptians, all the Gaza Strip rabbits, all those rabbits in Lebanon just put down their guns and wanted a state and start having peace chants. Do a Gandhi. Do an Indira Gandhi or something like that. That would be a nightmare for them. What they want is they want to stoke the fires left, right, and center. And there are some elements in Hezbollah and whatnot that have always played into this dangerously for them. I mean, they might win the battle on propaganda that they've been oppressed and everything else like this, but if they ever lay down their guns and chant it for peace, which they may do, that may be the big fear on Israel's side, that would be a total nightmare. But what do you do if the whole entire world recognizes a Palestinian state, but you don't? Well, what you do is you go to war, I guess. It looks like that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to just stoke the fires. They want the problems to be Iran, the problems to be everything but their own. And it is a nightmare. The only way that they see out of it is obviously war, because that's what they're doing. But let's dance around here. You have, Bibi votes Republican, a big piece by Patrick J. Buchanan. He talks about Bibi Netanyahu coming over here and making a stand. But if you're going to war, there's no point in coming over here talking about peace. You want to come over here, you want to seem strong, you want to be stomping on U.S. presidents. And at the same time, if you're Team Pink Rabbit, if you're the Jimmy Carter set, this group is not cohesive, especially when you get into the difference between like a Netanyahu and Obama. If you're on that Jimmy Carter set, they don't want it to look like they don't want peace. So the only way to get that on track is to propose some deal or to propose some new negotiation. Reuters: Israeli leaders test nuclear bunker and defense drill. This is a brand new big nuclear bunker. Officials said it was the first time the security cabinet headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had tested the National Monument Center carved out beneath the government complex in Jerusalem. This thing's way underneath the ground. It's pretty wild. You'd have to read about it, but there's all kinds of bunkers. They've been building stuff left, right, and center. Interesting piece comes out. I can't pronounce this rabbit's name. It's a Muslim name. It's from globalresearch.ca, and it's the secret wars of the Saudi-Israeli alliance. What is coming out in the Israeli world is that the House of Saud, the Sunni, and the Israelis are not enemies. At the top, they're very cohesive. They see eye to eye. They play good rabbit, bad rabbit. They run that racket. They wage war by deception, don't they? In fact, I'd venture to say, and I'd be willing to bet money, the House of Saud could be DNA tested and all get Israeli membership, all get Israeli citizenship through that maternal line. We've speculated on that to no end, haven't we? But it's an interesting piece. Any of you don't think that the Israelis and the House of Saud don't have a racket going? They do. They're linked to Anglosphere. They're linked to Team Pink Rabbit. And they play lots of games, and there are a tremendous amount of games going on. U.S. preparing to invade Libya. I've been asked about this. What's my take? Apparently, there's this huge Marine drill, and there's always drills going on somewhere on the planet, but there's a huge one on the East Coast, and they were practicing an invasion drill. What's it called? Male Fist, Operation Male Fist. I'll put this up. You can read about it. It was huge. This huge drill on the East Coast. It's from, one of the Carolinas all the way up to... most of the exercise will occur above North Carolina and South Carolina. It's two states. Horace, are they actually going to prepare to invade Libya, or are they prepared to invade America? I don't know. It may just be a convenience excuse, but they may be going in Libya. Libya's right next to Egypt. You've got Israel right there, and you've got Syria. And at any given time, if you're pushing a destabilization strategy under the code, color revolution. Now, this is not a normal color revolutions. They're going for chaos. Colored revolutions, generally, they're trying to change power without violence. You know, you get into Ukraine and whatnot. But this is a colored revolution with bombs. Eventually, when you're pushing something like this, you're going to push up against someone that's going to push back. And I don't know when that tripwire is going to be hit. And I don't know if it is going to be hit in a conventional sense. We're going to go into that in part two. But let's keep moving around, and we're going to go, obviously, North Africa. The big one everyone's watching is Syria. I don't think it's going to happen like everyone thinks, but I could be wrong. I mean, the whole time I've said that there's going to be a big, big war and the whole place is going to blow up, and it looks like that's going to happen, and now I'm saying that it may be something else, or there may be a few spins in. We're going to go into that, but that's the trend in place. Sooner or later, you're going to hit a tripwire, and you're going to push up against someone that can really fight back. Do I think they're going to take out Gaddafi? They haven't. Do I think they actually killed his kids, or is this an act? Well, I don't know. I think there's all kinds of acting going on. If you've got to get a military in on this side of Israel, on this side of Syria, well, Libya is a great place, isn't it? It's an easy place. It's an easy place to get a military in. But to get a military in, you've got to create a problem, right? So until they haul Gaddafi out, until they kill him or haul him in front of some tribunal and hang him, I don't know. I don't know. I know this. There's a lot of games going on, and I don't believe half of what I read because I don't think we're getting a lot of good information. But the trend is obvious to see. All these little machinations. And, of course, another big one that everyone's looking at, this even made a piece by a columnist named Paul Craig Roberts. He writes some good pieces. This was on VDare. Will Washington, and it was carried all over the place, will Washington foment war between China and India? China, we've went over this nine ways of Sundays. China has the largest public central bank in the middle of in the history of the world. They've done very well for themselves. Team Pink Rabbit does not allow one of those. If any of those in the history of our, in the history of the world as we know it, anyone has that, you're going to get attacked. You're going to get attacked. They're going to foment war. They want their type of banking, which is private central banking. By and large, you're always going to have the Rothschilds involved and now the U.S. Federal Reserve System on some level, so on and so forth. We went over that. But China has this huge public central bank, and they do well for themselves. They print their money debt-free. There's Team Pink Rabbit, the Red Hippopotamus. He doesn't like that stuff. That ain't going to fly. That's going to get attacked. Doesn't matter whether it's American founding fathers. Doesn't matter whether it's Nazi Germany. Doesn't matter whether it's ancient Sparta. That's got to go. They've got to have that control point. So the question has always been, what are they going to do? I mean, you've got this huge ring around them. You've got this huge ring around China, and China has done some dumb things with their neighbors. China has, you know, they've got these young lieutenants out there. I don't know if they call them that in the Chinese Navy and whatnot. And they're running around these nice new boats. Why? Because they got lots of money now, and they're pushing up against Vietnamese fishermen and whatnot, and they're pissing off a lot of their neighbors. And so you have this huge coalition. I've went over this before around China. But you also have India. And India right now, the top of India, one whole section, just one section is run by Team Pink Rabbit. And is this something the Brzezinskis could do? Yes. What the Brzezinskis are doing, in other words, using India, nuclear India, to take out China. Wouldn't that be a messy morning? World War III? Certainly. Certainly. But what they've done in Pakistan, there are those that believe that, and this is wild speculation, but it is never nonetheless provocative, that the drill you saw over bin Laden in Pakistan was actually a drill near their nuclear control areas. And what they're going to do is they're going to go in and take control. Washington, the Brzezinskis, are going into a Pakistan destabilization strategy. And that strategy will start, this is crazy, they're going to go in and snatch their nuclear weapons or take control of them just like they snatched bin Laden. That was kind of like a mini test. crazy? Absolutely. Dicey stuff. But when they do that, India's going to attack Pakistan. And when India attacks Pakistan, of course, China has to get involved. Now, China has issued an ultimatum that any attack on Pakistan will be attack on China. Why? Because of Straits of Hormuz and China. The Straits of Hormuz, if you look at a map, you're going all out. You know, as the Straits of Hormuz come out one way, America's oil comes out one way of Straits of Hormuz. Well, on the other end of the Straits of Hormuz, you've got Pakistan and you've got all this Central Asia stuff, and China needs access that way, too. So the Chinese have built a naval base over there. By and large, many believe to watch their goods on that part of the world, and you get into all these politics revolving oil. Interesting stuff. And so there is speculation that they are they're going to use India to take out China, which is something they would do. The Brzezinskis are much better at stoking ethnic conflict than even the Israelis. Not that he's a genius. The Israelis and the neocons aren't that brilliant either. You can see it coming a mile away. But that is something they do. And there's a lot of internal problems in Pakistan, too. You got the Pashtuns against this. And all it's tailor-made for this type of strategy. Will they do it? I don't know. It's a coin flip. It's a crazy scenario. It's a World War III scenario. But that's the type of stuff that's going on. That's the type of speculation going on from very good speculators. Paul Craig Roberts is not really some nutball. But this is something they would do. And of course, Obama has run wild. It's like they've kicked it in high gear all of a sudden, and Congress can't get control of the situation in Libya or whatnot. Well, you're going to have to go big or go home, because believe it or not, they're behind the lines. They're behind the lines and where they need to be to go for a new world order. If that's their strategic objective, which I believe it is, they're going to go for a new world order, and they're going to have to do a big, big act. Right now, I don't believe the war is even big enough. And in phase two, I'm going to go into that. We're going into some other speculation, down another angle, some stuff that's come out. But let's move on along here. Senior Israeli source, Iranian Revolutionary Guard propping up Syrian regime. A lot of people are looking at Syria to be a tripwire. I don't know that it will be necessarily, but that's kind of what you see is what you get. A lot of my listeners right now could probably see that. Well, if they do it this far, sooner or later, they're going to push against someone that's going to push back, and we're going to be in a gigantic rabbit shitstorm. And this is Israeli pieces now. Now that they're pushing for a peace process with the Palestinians, is the peace process the road to war? This is IsraeliNationalNews.com. Arutz Shiva. Is the peace process the road to war? Yeah, you can't win with Israelis. Every process you propose is a road to war. Palestinian statehood bid could lead to war. This is the head of a senior Israeli politician, Mofaz, M-O-F-A-Z, has said this is just June 27th. This is very recent stuff. Yeah, in other words, peace could lead to war. War could lead to peace. Peace could lead to war. And then, of course, you've had an interesting piece came out in Press TV, which is it's basically anti-Israeli. Israeli pushing Obama to war, into war with Iran. Israeli lobbying U.S. pushing Barack Obama into war with Iran. I'll put these all up on my Twitter, of course. And it talks about the Israeli lobby, AIPAC. A lot of it's true. I think there's all kinds of stuff going on. The trend in place will be in place until the trend explodes, accelerates, which you've seen an acceleration. The events coming on, any one of them I could do a whole podcast about. Some of them are quite funny. You have big Jewish bankers busted in New York, which, you know, it's pretty rare, especially from the IMF. This is all, in my opinion, internal politics as these idiots go for their new world order. Or try to, or get something going. You never know until it happens. You never know they are going to attack, going to put troops into Libya until they do it. We're just speculating on trends. But I've been asked, do I think there's going to be any false terror drills? I haven't really talked about that. I'm not a big fear monger. The only drills that they've been drilling for night and day. You know, there's always some terror drill going on in America, it seems like. But the only drills that they've been going at night and day are the ones that Leon Panetta has warned about. He's the head of, I think it is CIA now. I can't even keep track of the own rabbits, the rabbits in Washington. But Leon Panetta wears a lot of hats. He was in the Clinton administration. He's always jumping around. He's at the CIA, or was. But anyways, he's talking about where the next Pearl Harbor was going to be. And he said, the next Pearl Harbor would be a cyber attack. That's what they've been drilling for. In fact, I was watching a special on CNN, I want to say it was a couple of years ago, where they were doing a mock cyber attack drill. And that's the ultimate gotcha. They've also passed laws where the president can send out a text message down every network. You know, like Verizon and AT&T can send out a text message to all their customers. Well, he wants the ability to do that across all their networks. I don't think they want to take out, if there is a cyber attack, I'm guessing a terrorist attack, it's going to be cyber. That's just a guess. That's what they're testing. That's what they're drilling for. That's what they're doing all these drills over. they're drilling false flags. They're doing drills for false flags. But I don't think they actually want to shut down the internet completely. I think they want to take control of it. They might want to shut down my site. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it would be a good day, but I think they're going to have to take control of it. And I've said this before, where they want to be, where they have to be in the very near future. They're going to have to make big moves, and they're going to have to make big moves fast. And that's what you're seeing. The difference is, of course, everyone now can see it. But that is something they'd have to do. They're going to have to take control of the internet. I don't know how you do that without some type of crazy stuff. But predicting what they can do is what they're going to do is insane. One of the parties around Obama, going back to the India equation, to the Central Asia, to all the India and China, one of the parties around Obama, this is exclusively a leadster, not necessarily when you get into the Jew rabbit set, you're into the leadster set, is John P. Holdren. And Holdren, in 1977, talked about depopulating India and depopulating China and depopulating these areas. That's kind of scary stuff. They call him a Hitler-type character, but Hitler never talked about anything as radical as these guys. So if you want to start talking about an element of Team Pink Rabbit having control of India, India's nukes, God forbid, and they want to start a huge storm over there. Obama surrounded by art people, and you can look up John P. Holdren, H-O-L-D-R-E-N. Look him up. Webster Tarpley did a huge piece quoting his 1977 book on what they want to do, depopulating the planet. You want to start going crazy. They want to do something crazy like that. I don't know that anyone's in place to stop them. Could a Republican Congress stop them? No. No, they're going to do it. And it's so crazy, most people don't think they would do it, but you wouldn't know it until it's all already over. But that's the type of stuff going on, and these parties are all around Obama. And on the other side of the equation, you have the Israeli destabilization, which is intact, in going, and Israel's at the heart of that. The Mossad's running around, and the neocons are running around, and they want the whole Middle East to look like Yemen, which is absolute chaos, total chaos. And sooner or later, you're going to push up against someone that's going to push back. And in the next section, I'm going to cut this off because basically I could go down every single stream and do a whole piece on it. But the trend is important. In the next piece, I'm going to cover from alternative news and research because that is being used. Pseudo-conspiracy stuff is being used by now being used by major parties to put out certain messages and certain memes. It always has been, but we're going to do a mini piece on that, which I think is kind of important. I'm going to give you some updates, some big updates involving Russia, involving Team Pink Rabbit, and we're going to speculate. Now, it is speculation. It's a particular type of speculation, but yet, nonetheless, my audience members want to hear that. So that's what we're going to go into next. But no change equals no change, and they're headed for big, big war. What we're going to go into next is the jump the tracks. They may just jump the tracks. They don't have to go to war under any conventional what you see is what you get angle. They may do something crazy. Helter Skelter. Now, they need help to do that, but it's from the sounds of it, they may have enlisted some help. And we're going to go into that next. These podcasts have been delayed because, a brief update for my listeners, because there was a lot of rain in the particular area I'm in. I'm not near the, a lot of people know, listeners, a whole section of my listeners know that there was floods in my area. Yeah, swim, horse, swim. I always say swim, rabbit, swim. It was swim, horse, swim. There was some flooding in my area. It had to do with a lot of rainfall. I'm not near the nuclear power plant out there, but there's flooding going on all over the world and all over America due to large abnormal amounts of rainfall, and some of it came in my rabbit hole, and that delayed a podcast or two or three beyond my control. But everything's okay. Everyone's okay. Moving right along here, but that is why the podcast delayed, because I had a few ready to come out. Podcast delayed because I can't control water. No, I can't. But everybody's okay, and you can't you can't make podcasts with water coming in. No, you can't. You got to take care of that. But it's not the end of the world. A lot of rabbits had it a lot worse, and a lot of rabbits will probably have it a lot worse, but that's why it was delayed. And there's an update on the NewsNet 14. Team White Rabbit, behind Bugs, I let them vote. It was kind of 50-50 on whether or not to do a special show for NewsNet 14 or not. And what the party behind Bugs, one of the parties behind Bugs, the person that, the actual party that actually put me up to this podcast, Horse Avengers Follow the White Rabbit, has said is that it's not a bad idea to do a members-only section, but they want to keep it on my site. If I'm going to do anything special, they want it all associated with one site, because moving stuff to NewsNet 14 might confuse some people, might confuse some rabbits and whatnot. That kind of makes sense to me. The only reason I was going to do that is because they were going to run it. But this party said that he would be up to, just like he was up to getting the podcast started, he would be up to running a members-only section. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but what would happen is one morning you would see a members-only section. And I don't know if phase one would be doing a members-only section that would be completely free, and I'm going to dump stuff in there because I have all kinds of stuff. And that would be completely free, but what it would allow, the reason he has thought this was a good idea, would allow me to put out a lot of stuff that I have and continue to put out stuff. For instance, I got two different podcasts that I could put in there as is in a very informal basis, put it in piece by piece in a very informal basis, because the only ones that are going to be in a members-only section, even a free section, are the ones interested in the podcast. When you put up a podcast, you know, a lot of people come to my site and they download the last podcast to see what it's about. Although it says you got to listen to them in order, they don't. But a members-only site would be a little bit different, a section. You'd log in and you would be able to get a hold of some goodies. That would be free. There would be a free section. That's phase one. And after talking to him about it, it's something that we want to try to work toward and do ASAP, simply because I have a lot of stuff. And it's an informal area where people that have already heard this podcast, they know my agenda, they know where we're going with this. I could put stuff in there. There would be nothing in there practical politics related, necessarily. Anything practical politics, I would try to get into a whole podcast, obviously, immediately. That's what the site's about. But we went down a couple avenues, you know, and those couple avenues generate a lot of interest, and I do have other stuff out there, but putting it together in a podcast takes time, and it also, I try to do stuff in some type of order, but I have stuff about the Elitesters. I have stuff about, Nazi Germany, some different ideals, some different stuff that have been done or in the process of being done. A couple more podcasts. They're kind of, they wouldn't be like anything you've ever heard before. But that I would put in those particular areas. So, look, we're going to try to get it done. Now, nothing's done until it's done, but this party tends to strike like lightning. Yeah, he's like lightning striking over there at Team Bugs, and he handles everything for them, and he wants to do this. He wants to do a members-only section. Phase one would be a free area. Phase two, which I don't know if phase two will ever happen. We got to get through phase one. Phase two would actually be something like they wanted at NewsNet 14. Me doing the news constantly, and I would call it in-game Exotica. And we will go over all kinds of funny stuff happening during the day. Every day, probably, at this, I could do stuff all day long, and he's going to put stuff up there. In other words, I can't do this stuff by myself, but he wants to help. He wants to get it going, and he wants, he doesn't make any money running Bugs or anything like that. That's not the agenda of Bugs. But he would want to, it would be like a $10 a month or something menial. Remedial, maybe me lower, maybe slightly above that, probably $10 a month, and it would be in-game Exotica, and there would be two sections. One would be regular geopolitical news, and this is what we're kicking around, regular geopolitical news, and then I would go to the wild side and do a section, Nazi Never Never Land Ranch, and we'll do all kinds of crazy stuff, crazy news events coming down, main channels, whether it be NASA or the Russians, the stuff I'm going to go into next. You're going to hear a bite of that next. So there would be two channels that we'd hit on. I try to hit on it every day, maybe every other day. And it would be very short pieces, very short updates. But that is possible. That's possible. But the first high probability that I want is a members-only section where I can dump stuff for free. Just a total free section where I got extra stuff. I can't make it into a podcast, but I do have an audience. I have an audience that says, well, I know what you talk about and I want you to talk about this. Well, some stuff I've already talked about. I just haven't put it into a podcast where I can put different stuff in a very informal way and not worried about having to lay out stuff in some particular order. I can just throw stuff at you and you know, you've already heard it. Anyone listening to all these podcasts have already heard enough stuff. You know the areas I go into. But I could put stuff in there and speculate in there and put short 10-minute pieces or 20-minute pieces. Or like I said, I've got two whole podcasts designed in sections. I could put those up pretty quickly in a free section and not worried about someone just downloading it and understand what's this little section about. Well, you know, it would be a members-only section for people who like the podcast, who have already listened to pretty much the whole thing. You're going to have to listen to the whole thing to understand most of the stuff in there. That is most likely what I want. That's what we're going with. And since Team Bugs is behind it, and since the big power that be behind Bugs wants to do it or wants to help on it, last time I checked, that's probably what we're going to do, and I would be able to get caught up pretty quickly. The podcast would be designed around practical politics, and anything big happens, I will put a podcast up. But podcasts are not a regular feature. It would be much easier for me to do small updates. If I have to do an update, do a small update, even in floods, he can do an update. I can do an update over Skype. He can record it and put it up there or whatever, and he would be helping run it. The problem with me running it by myself is, well, that ain't going to happen. It was the same problem with me getting the podcast started by myself. It would never happen. I'd need help. But anyways, that's where we're going with that. So there is no NewsNet 14 members-only area. They want to keep everything on my site, which is fine. NewsNet 14 is great. We may do something with them eventually. Phase one, we're going to try to get a members-only free section up. You would just get him, I don't know exactly how it's going to work. He's going to set it up. But you would get a name, password, and log in and get some goodies. Now, are all podcasts going to go down that road? No. No, we're going to stay on this particular tip until it's over. But at the same time, there are two particular areas I go down, and there's lots of news. So I see, and I've heard the request, why don't you just do a regular news piece, geopolitics, or why don't you just do some alternative research stuff, because your stuff is a lot better than what's out there. At least your stuff has some sources and whatnot. And I've heard that as well, and we're going to kick that around in phase two. He likes the ideal, and he would be getting a percentage to run it. Which is fine. I don't know if I'd get 50 subscribers or 10 subscribers or 100. I don't really care about that. But phase one does make sense to me, and it made sense to him. You need a members-only site where you can dump this stuff because you already have quite a few listeners, and you have a very, at least a rapport with them. They know where you're going. There's not going to be any surprises if they go in there and download something, and they're going to understand where you're coming from, basically, if they've heard the whole thing. So that kind of makes sense at this point in time, and that's what we're going to shoot for. But if it comes out, there would be an announcement on the front page that the members-only free section is up. And if anything goes beyond that, there would obviously be an announcement as well. And we're going to go into phase two. Phase two, I'm going to go down alternative news and research, and we're going to talk about some stuff, because some stuff has come out down mainstream channels that you might need to be aware of. In this podcast, we go over some pretty out there stuff. I cover a type of media called alternative news and research, and a lot of it's garbage. A lot of the Rents.com stuff is garbage. It can be entertaining stuff, but it's garbage. It's not backed up by any data. A lot of it's speculation billed as the truth, and that's the problem. If it's speculation, just say it's speculation, or you should label it as such. And if you can't back up something you're saying with numbers or sources or pictures or, you know, something along those lines, well, it's just speculation. It is what it is. But the alternative news and research, the Red Ice Creations and whatnot, speculate on some pretty wild events that have the potential to happen. And there's some characters there that have made big names for themselves. Some off legitimate speculation, which means they're speculating with actual data, and some of it off a lot of nonsense. And I sit neither here nor there toward a lot of them. I only really look at one set of books by one particular author, Joseph P. Farrell, and he covers everything you can want to cover. The difference is that he reveals his sources, and when he speculates, he does so with data and pictures and facts and all kinds of interesting stuff. And he covers everything a rabbit could want to cover down that particular avenue. But there's another character I mentioned before, Richard C. Hoagland. Now, he's quite famous for A Face on Mars. But basically, when you're speculating down this particular venue, it's basically speculating on what the world would be like 6 months after I have to use a water filter for the first time. In other words, let's say America goes downhill fast and you need water filters. You need your Katadyn camping water filter. And every week that goes by that you would need a water filter or need a water filtration system in somewhere like America, every week that goes by, part of your life would change pretty drastically. This is kind of common sense. And there's been a big trend toward this type of survival sites, and even, in fact, there's a huge media related to it too, as well. There's all these different survival shows. But basically, in America, if I own some water filters, if I need them outside of camping, every week that goes by that I need those, something would change pretty radically. Yeah, if you need water filters to survive in America for fresh water, something big would happen. But that is speculation, because I haven't used my water filters yet outside of a camping situation or something like that. I don't know that I'll need them. I don't know that it's end of the world or anything like that, but I do own them. And so speculating on what the world would be like if you needed water filters in America or Europe for more than, say, 90 days becomes fascinating. Because at a certain point of time, within so many weeks, probably within the first couple, you don't need your checkbook anymore. The world of checkbooks and credit cards and the local whoop-de-doo mart and the world of MTV, that world is gone. We're in a whole new type of reality television show, right? We're in the real deal. But that is speculation. It hasn't happened yet. And I don't know that it ever will, but I do own water filters, and I'm quite aware of it, that there's a certain type of listeners that are very big into survival stuff, but that is all speculation. We know it's speculation because it hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean it won't happen, but until it happens, it's speculation. And the Richard C. Hoagland speculate, but they speculate down a little bit different venue. Some of it's more interesting than others. Dr. P. Farrell speculates. He speculates down a different venue, a radically different venue than what you're used to, but it is a big media. It's a huge media. Richard C. Hoagland's wrote a couple bestsellers, and he is pretty well connected, in my opinion, among certain sources at the top of Pink Rabbit sphere. And so I watch him. Not necessarily that, and he may be scared to death of them, for all I know. Some of these guys are. They get involved and they're scared to death of certain parties. For the same reason, certain racialist audience members may be scared to death of the government for various different reasons. Some of these people have a lot of power, and if you step on their toes, you can get yourself in trouble. And some of them touch on religion, and touching on religion is always a dicey subject matter. But in this podcast, historically, I've done some water filter type speculation. What would the world be like 3 weeks after I have to have a water filter? You have to boil, let's say you had to boil your water for a month or 2 months, or you couldn't get fresh water, and you needed a water filter, a tracing system to get it out of a stream at the local park. Wow. Pretty wild month in America, wouldn't it? You think you're going to need your credit card? You think you're going to need Mad Max? I don't know. It's interesting speculation, but there's whole websites devoted to that survival stuff. Well, the Richard C. Hoagland's go down a different road of speculation. It can be entertaining. It can be interesting. Anything's interesting to me if it's backed up by trends in the media, because the survival stuff is backed up by a big trend in the media. The rabbits would say, wait a minute, Horace, wait a minute. There's a trend in the media that says that may be a go. It's true. Someone may be showing you something. Someone might be showing you that the wheels are about to come off the wagon or something on a global basis, that you might need to know that. What's that show where the guys, they drop him in the middle of the wilderness and he has to get back? But most Americans have already been there. It's called the ghetto. But anyways, that's a trend in media, these survival shows. But there's another trend in media. The trend in media is really over-the-top stuff. And the trend in media that I'm going to talk about next, and I'm going to answer some questions in regards to alternative news and research. So the trend in media that's been one of the most eye-catching is the alien stuff. You know, where are they going with this? And what would happen if they did go there? Forget about if there are no aliens. What if you want to do something like that? What if you want to do a knockoff alien attack? Why is it relevant? It's relevant because even Ronald Reagan said, what would happen if there was a force from beyond that was coming here? Would it bring humanity together? I mean, there's some presidents that have talked about this, and some different big names that have speculated on knockoff alien attacks and stuff like that. You know, like Rockefeller, Rothschild, Henry Kissinger, stuff like that. So it's speculation. Comets. What would happen if a comet hit the Earth? That's another big trend in the media. That would be a combination of survival situation, everything else. So there are trends in media, but the alien thing is very pervasive. What's interesting about the alien thing that I've never went into, and we were talking about it just the other day, and I've talked about this stuff, come back and back to it, because they shove this thing down our throats. You know, we have to speculate on what our enemy's going to do way ahead of the fact. Just so if it happens, you know. Just like, I don't know if I need my water filters. I'm agnostic on whether or not I'll ever need them in America. I don't know. But I do have them. And it is entertaining speculation towards survival situations. Well, in the trend in the media regarding the alien, one of the most interesting things is there's this big Jew rabbit out in Hollywood. Very well connected. I think we can all agree. His name's Steven Spielberg. And Mr. Jew Rabbit Steven Spielberg has an interesting history with extraterrestrial alien type movies, fiction. What's significant is that where he started the trend started is not where it went. In other words, it did a reversal. Trend reversals are very rare in the media. You cannot point to a trend reversal among our enemy with the exception of maybe one thing, and that's aliens. That's what's interesting about it. Steven Spielberg started his career on E.T. Extraterrestrial. Besides Jaws, of course. E.T. Extraterrestrial, and the older one, of course, was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 1977, E.T. Extraterrestrial, 1982. And they're both benign. Visitors from outer space are coming here. They's gonna love us. They's nice. Yes, E.T. phone home. Oh, it's all hugs and kisses. And you can look up E.T. the Extraterrestrial. You can look at the cover. It's a little E.T. touching a little white boy. Oh, it's warm and cozy. And, of course, Close Encounters of the Third Kind is another type of thing. It's pretty benign. There's visitors from another world that come here. It's cool. We sit back and we have some carrot juice with them. You know, and they hang out with us. But that ain't where he went with it. That ended abruptly, and he did a radical reversal. It's one of the rarest things to see in Hollywood. You know, typically, if the trend in Hollywood is toward white rabbit genocide, that trend becomes more pronounced and more pernicious. They don't reverse it, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, whether they're pushing interracial marriages in white countries and only white countries, that's what they do in Hollywood. That trend doesn't become less. It becomes more pervasive the longer it goes on. But and the alien thing has become more pervasive, but not from the point of it originally started. Originally, you got E.T. Extraterrestrial. We got Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's all nice and fuzzy. Aliens are nice and funny, according to Steven Spielberg. But Spielberg has done an abrupt change, and he's an interesting ticket out in Hollywood because he's a big Jew rabbit. He's a pink rabbit. Yes, he is. He's very much in the know. And the type of movies he flipped to and he started making are the type of movies where Well, there's two basic themes, but the most basic theme is there are hostile elements coming to this planet, and we got to fight them. And this is all over the place. There's all kinds of new show. There's another, the V for visitors, and there's a variety of different ones. I think he's, there's several new ones on TV, and this is pervasive on the science sci-fi channel, and there's several ones out right now. One of them has a, has some famous actors in it, and it's about aliens attack the planet, and it's always the same thing. Aliens attack the planet, and we gotta fight them, basically. And Steven Spielberg is a consultant on many of these. Now, one of them has a famous actor named Noah Wyle, and this is brand new. He's getting older now, Noah Wyle, and it's called Falling Skies. Maybe you've seen Falling Skies. Now, this stuff is a dime a dozen. You're seeing this stuff over and over again, but it's common. It's one common theme that Spielberg's involved in. I think Spielberg is involved in Falling Skies on some level. He's involved in several of them. But they're always around. Aliens are coming here. We've got to fight them. We've got to defend our world against these evil aliens. But that's not where his career started. That's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting. Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind as we go forward. I've talked about this many, many times. And what's the build up here? Where are we going with this? Well, Richard C. Hoagland, the Alternative News and Research has a variety of different venues. And they've been holding some conferences, and various different conferences have been held in a video mode. Like, everyone's sitting around, they're all in front of their video cameras, and they're having a live conference. And some of these conferences are quite big. Red Ice Creations had one that was tuned into by gazillions. And Red Ice Creations, you can look them up through one of the largest, most successful websites in the world. They actually have a lot of subscribers at $30 a head every month. They are very, these are some very wealthy media outlets, and they've also got a lot of attention from guess who? All different types of intelligence agencies and whatnot, because, well, it's a good way to put out propaganda, it's a good way to put out a meme, it's a good way to put out a message about a particular event. But he did a interview, and I'm going to put it up, called Our Breakaway Civilization, and this was done on March 20, 2011, before a big Red Ice Creation conference. And Richard C. Hoagland is famous for the face on Mars. It's irrelevant whether or not I believe that. I'm kind of agnostic. I don't know what to believe. I can't see any face on Mars. Doesn't mean it's not there. Just means I haven't seen enough data to satisfy myself yet. But I am interested in this particular media trend, the alien trend, and where they're going to go with it in case they jump off the track. In other words, our enemy's going to war. That's kind of obvious. They're pushing to war. But that may not be enough. And if that's not enough, there's only a couple places you can go, and that is something big. In other words, you're going for a colored revolution, but you're not going for a colored revolution in just a country or place. You're setting up and try to go for a global colored revolution. And that's how you'd go for a new world order. Do I think they'll have a new world order? No. We're still having this conversation. Do I think they may jump off a cliff? And that's what's going for a new world order is basically jumping off a cliff. Because once you go in one of these areas, whether it be a knockoff comet or a real alien invasion, who knows, a fake alien invasion, once you go in one of these crazy areas and you start using that technology, there's no putting it back in the box. You can go to war you can go to war in Iraq and have it be a disaster and pink rabbits and come back to America. You pull off something like that, you ain't going to put it back in the box. So I've constantly looked at this. And we have some huge events coming out of Russia. And I'll get to that. It's all combined down this trend of what they may do. We have to speculate on what they may do and what they're capable of doing. And our enemy's really capable of trying anything, in my opinion. They're that nuts. But anyways, Richard C. Hoagland comes out with it's presented on YouTube. I'll give it to you on YouTube. It's free. He comes up with this particular interview, and he does these interviews all the time. Prior to this big conference, this big video conference, online conference about breakaway civilizations. In other words, it's the sum of it up, and you'd have to listen to it to believe it. Of what they're putting out, this particular message, is that Nazis escaped the planet. They resurrected in ancient physics, basically, is what he believes. They escaped the planet, and they're out there somewhere. And they may be coming back, or there may be others with them coming back, whatever. And we may have to fight them. The banksters are generally evil, is his premise. The pink rabbits are generally evil. That's no news to my listeners. But the pink rabbits have been screwed over by Nazis. And so they're throwing their lot in with humanity and giving us new technology so we can fight Nazis from outer space or one of these other things. you'd really have to hear, if you've heard this podcast from the beginning, you'd really have to hear this. Now, this is from one of the largest media networks in the world. This is a New York Times bestseller. Someone likes him. Someone pays attention to him. So I pay attention to him. And I don't know if he actually believes Pink Rabbit was from evil invading Nazis, but you'd really have to hear this. And is he speculating just out there? Yeah, sure, he's speculating out there. But these ideals didn't come from nowhere. And I think it's pretty fascinating, and it's entertaining. I was asked directly about this. Because if you've listened to this podcast from the beginning, then you hear something like this in March 20, 2011. It's a heads up. It's like, wait a minute. Horace is talking about crazy stuff like this. This guy's coming out with it. You know, this is a New York Times. This is the only alternative news and researcher, by the way, one of the only with a New York Times bestseller. You know, Dark Mission, where he talks about Nazis and NASA. Nazis were at NASA. It's a fact. Former Nazi party members, whatever. But we went down that road of speculation, but you really got to hear, and I was asked direct questions about it, but what the person that asked the questions doesn't understand is that if the Nazis could have done something like that, you're in the set of golden if-thens. They can't resurrect the physics unless the physics are real. The physics can't be real unless they're based on a paleo-ancient civilization, which Dr. Richard Hoagland believes in. He believes at one time there was a paleo-ancient civilization, a couple million years back, actually, long time ago, was in this solar system. And that they burned down this solar system in a war. It's a war between God and the devil, basically, for lack of a better way to put it. They burned down the solar system. They didn't burn down the planets they came from. They burned down the solar system. And there's artifacts. And so what he's doing with the face on Mars and these different moonlets of Saturn, some of it's quite interesting, is he's going from the outside in. He's saying there's a big war here and there's artifacts out there and I'm going to find these artifacts. Farrell does a different thing. Dr. Joseph P. Farrell does something. He takes the mythology as like the Bible and he puts it in context of this ancient war and so on and so forth. I've been over this a million. I went over this any way you'd want to go over it. I went over this from the perspective of racial perspective. But he actually believes that. And so the problem that you come into with what he's saying is our enemy wouldn't be concerned with fighting Nazis, is my point. If the paleo-ancient civilization was real, the people that ran it were real, and they're coming back into the solar system. They ain't worried about fighting Nazis. So don't even worry about that. And by the way, I would like to see them reveal that one morning. Imagine if that were true. How would you come out with that? Oh, that's interesting speculation. There's a lot behind World War II. None of it has been resolved in Western civilization. But if something like that were true, what's funny is the only ones on planet Earth that would want to fight Nazis are all white. Yeah, the Palestinians would say, thank God Hitler's coming back to save us. Yeah. Can you imagine if there are Nazis? Steven Spielberg comes out one morning. All the Hollywood, Fox News comes out. There are Nazis in outer space. They're going to invade here. We got to fight them. Well, a billion Muslims would say, oh, great. I mean, they didn't kill any Muslims. A lot of Africans would say they didn't kill any Africans. Basically, a lot of Germans would be pissed because they've probably been lied to. A lot of white rabbits would be shaking their heads and wouldn't know what to do. And a lot of Jews would be scared to death. But this would be pretty funny. And they could never do that because they've been blackmailed within an inch of their life. But they're not. My point is they wouldn't be afraid of Nazis. That's a simple if-then. They can't be out there in ancient ruins from an ancient civilization, unless that civilization was real. If that civilization is real, the people that ran it are real, and you're dealing with the second coming again, aren't you? You're dealing with that from a very different perspective. But it's entertaining nonetheless. It is a form of entertaining, just like some of you maybe watch survival shows as a form of entertainment. But this entertainment could be very, very surreal if they ever jump it off the track and try to do something crazy. These are things to be aware of, that these memes are out there, that someone's putting this stuff out there. And typically when you have a trend in the media that's pervasive with extraterrestrial stuff, they're going somewhere with it. Now, there's not necessarily anything good for us in the short term, but you should be aware of it. So that's my response to that. I'm not concerned about it because that's a golden set of if-thens. That can't happen unless a few other things are in place. And if they are out there, that also means there's something here with us, which would explain a lot of other stuff, especially this next character. This next character is Putin, the Russians, who plays a lot of games, to say the least. He plays games so much that the Russians now, I have Russian listeners that don't even understand the games he's playing because some of it's so over the top. He has traditionally been a nightmare for Team Pink Rabbit. It doesn't mean he doesn't have an agenda dealing with them. He just gives them a nightmare. He gave them a nightmare in Georgia. He gives them a nightmare over energy policy. He is very aggressive. He sits on the outside of NATO, very aggressive character, always on the offense. The Germans, of course, sit inside of NATO. I went over this. And you know what they do? They drag their feet. It doesn't matter whether it's Libya. Germans, oh, we're pacifists. We can't go there. We're dragging our feet. And if they drag their feet, guess what happens to NATO? NATO's kaput. So you got Putin out there hammering him, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And you got the Germans dragging their feet, which is what they should do. But anyways, Putin is a very aggressive, very overt. And there's one thing you should know about the Russian media. There's nothing that can make the Russian media by accident. Nothing's done by accident. Our tendency is to look at the Russians talk about saving the white race, and that Russian official lost his job. That's irrelevant to the question. Now, if he didn't lose his job, that would tell us a whole lot more. That'd be what you see is what you get. But even coming out and saying that on the Russian media, on an official channel, that isn't possible without high approval. It just wouldn't make the media. They don't operate like that. They don't do things by accident. Putin doesn't go, he doesn't go to the restroom without having a plan. They know everything going on in their media. They are the masters of propaganda if they wanted to do it. Now, traditionally, Russian media of the last several years has been more accurate than most other media outlets on the planet. RT, Russia Today. I mean, these are very accurate media outlets in my opinion. They do some very accurate stuff. They're very upfront. But what they've just done is something that I've been asked a question over, and I'll read it to you. Russia warning issued over controlled comet headed towards Earth. Yeah, there's at any given time, there's all kinds of comets headed toward Earth. No big deal. There's hundreds of them right now. None of them hit us. I mean, obviously, it's only relevant if it's going to hit us. But what the Russians have said is that there's a controlled comet. And this is from a very high channel. It's called Comet Elenin, E-L-E-N-I-N. And you can look it up. Comet Elenin, E-L-E-N-I-N, and look up the Russians. And the Russians put out data on it. The Russian data is the direct contradiction of the NASA data. And so the question is, are the Russians for real, or what's going on? I don't really know. You're at a time when they're going to try something, but I will explain to you something about Putin. Putin won't let them have Georgia. The Russians aren't going to let Team Pink Rabbit have a colored revolution anywhere near them. They will stone them. But if you're going for a new world order, if they're going to jump off a cliff, if your enemy's going to jump off a cliff, and if they're at a time when they're going to jump off a cliff, and they have to cut a deal with you, which they would do if they were going to jump off a cliff. I mean, they would have to cut some kind of deal with Russia, because Russia could cause them the problems, you know, like global warming. Russia caused tremendous problems to the global warming propaganda. One little move and they stoned a whole conference. Well, hackers took down stuff from London. So the Russians can give you fits if they choose to give you fits. But something like this, if you're going big, you would have to have a deal from Russia. And what had occurred to me, and this is just speculation, it's not speculation that the Russians put this out. What it is speculation on why, is that you have an enemy that is it is backed up. They're going for a new world order. They're going to jump off a cliff. And when I say jump off a cliff, once you jump off a cliff, you ain't going to. They're testing a parachute, basically. No one knows what's going to happen. And since they're jumping off a cliff, they're not playing in Georgia. They're going for a cover revolution all over the planet. And since they're jumping off a cliff, Putin at the last minute decides to help them out. You know, all right, you're jumping off a cliff, I'm going to pack your parachute. Why do they want Putin packing their... They don't have a choice. They need to deal with the Russians. And that is what may have happened. That's why Putin talks one game and does another. That's why he's talking diversity and everything else. That's why he's actually talking more diversity over the past 18 months than anything else. He seems almost pink rabbitish. Actions, of course, speak louder than words. And the actions, there's a lot of cross currents underneath him that they're keeping alive. But when it comes to this Comet Elenin business, do I think it's real? No. But I think Team Pink Rabbit may be getting ready to jump off a cliff. You may be closer to that. In other words, they're just not going with the war scenario, which is kind of what everyone on the planet sees. If you have two eyes or just one eye, one ear, you know there's some wars going on. They're at war with five countries. They're at war behind the scenes, the likes of which no one's ever seen. Stories, everything's getting faster and bigger and quicker, and they might be getting ready to actually go off the rails. They might be getting ready to go in an area where they never went into, and that's what they would have to do. They would have to cut a deal with the Russians, and the Russians would put out something like this. Because the Russian media has somewhat credibility. Now, where's it going? I don't know. It's a water filter situation. I don't know. But I do know that once you jump off a cliff, there's no going back. Now, is Putin going to screw him over? Probably. Probably. I mean, if you think, if someone has to jump off a cliff and they need you to help them pack a parachute, well, they're in trouble to begin with. And he would cut a deal with one and screw over the other or whatever. He's Putin. He's Putty Poot. if I were Pink Rabbit, I wouldn't want to jump off a cliff with him packing the parachute because he's probably screwed him over somehow, but that this is a fact. And so I wouldn't get bent out of shape over it. I wouldn't get bent out of shape. Or we don't know anything until it happens. You don't know that you're going to need a water filter until you do. You know, if you need a water filtration system to get fresh water in somewhere in a first world country, well, you're in trouble. You're in trouble, obviously. But, I don't do the, there's a lot of fear porn over it. That's what I'll call it. It's a lot of fear porn. A comet's going to hit us and all the fear porn. I don't do the fear porn. I don't do that at all in this podcast. I just give you the facts and look at trends in media. And just because a trend in media is a lie doesn't mean it can't be relevant. But I do know that Team Pink Rabbit may be getting ready to jump off a cliff. They're going for a new world order. Now, what combination they pull, what they do, other than what we see them doing, going to war, and a big war, I don't know. What time frames? I don't know. There are certain events happening into this fall, into this winter, that have them spooked, and that's a whole nother podcast. I went at it from one direction. I'm going to go at it from another direction. It's an awakening humanity. Yeah, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe woke up in the late 1600s. We woke up on a conscious basis. It's a change in consciousness. The Asians, some would say the Asians woke up somewhere after 1950, and they went wild. Our race has been going wild for quite some time. Now, of course, coming in 2012, you've got all of humanity awakening. Some stuff they control, some stuff they can't control. Yeah, they don't have the type of control you think they have, and they don't have it on awakening command, on an awakening planet. You know, people don't want the same processes. And I'll go into that again from another perspective about consciousness. Changing consciousness of the planet. It's not new agey. It's basically right in front of you. It happened. Any racially aware person or anyone aware of the Jewish question has went through a change in consciousness. That is happening on a global basis in a lot of different ways. And there's some various different reasons why. Right beyond our senses or right in front of our face. And I'll go into that again in another podcast, maybe in a mini podcast from a totally different perspective to help you understand that. But there are various different events that would have them concerned. And obviously, they're bogged down, they're stuck. I don't know how they can get to where they want to go, to be honest with you, without doing something crazy. They're going to have to do something crazy. Now, I don't know what they're going to do until they do it. Another rabbit asked me, Horace, you predicted the trend toward war, and now it looks like you weren't lying, or at least not BSing us. There's a very big chance of a very, very big war from North Africa to all over Pakistan, that region. Are you traveling at all, or do you travel? Well, this talks about, you said our enemy has stopped traveling. They stopped flying to other countries. I'm not flying to Asia. I'm not flying to war zone. I'm not flying anywhere that I can't drive home to. You know, let's say these idiots do jump out the box. Let's say they do something crazy like a fake alien invasion. By the time the average person on this planet actually woke up, even if you were to fly, the fear porn always has us changing our behavior. Don't change your behavior over what pink rabbits do. I wouldn't. But my policy is that I'm not going to fly anywhere I can't drive home from. That would be the concern, basically. You know, we're white, we're living in white countries. Typically, they're only going to be controlled if they go this route, and that's just a big if. They're going to be controlled with controlling the airwaves, controlling the message, controlling what you see, feel, and think. They're not necessarily going to be controlling the roads and that type of thing. So even if you were to fly, let's say, from Washington, the state of Washington, all the way down to Florida, you could still drive home. By the time most of the planet realized what's going on, because you're pretty aware, you'd probably grab a rental car and be all the way back home. If you were to fly from Boston on for whatever reason to California, by the time and anything crazy broke out, by the time anyone realized what the big deal was, you could drive all the way home, even in a worst case scenario. But my thing, I mean, I'm not flying into war zones. I'm in America, obviously. I'm not flying to I'm not flying to Asia. I'm not flying anywhere far. I'm not flying anywhere I can't drive home to. I don't know that I'd even be afraid to fly to Europe, because you'd probably be, at least as long as you got friends to stay with there if something crazy happened. But I don't see World War III taking place in America in any conventional sense. It's taking place within this zone, this huge zone of North Africa to Central Asia and maybe Southeast Asia and East Asia. That's all I can tell you. I wouldn't rearrange my life to deal with these fools. I would go about my business and just be mindful of that. I don't do the fear porn, which means I don't let people scare me. But typically, the places I'm going over the next, let's say, 90 to 100 days, I'm going to drive anywhere I go. I'm not afraid of flying. But if you're like I said before, if you fly from Washington all the way to Florida to see relatives and something happens, well, you just get in a rental car and drive home or whatever. And it's no big deal if you're in America. If you're in Europe and you're in Russia and you've got to get back to Germany, well, you can get on a train and get back. They're not going to – those aren't danger zones, in my opinion. There can be a terrorist attack anywhere. I'm not talking about that. I don't see any type of terrorist attack except the ones they talk about, the cyber terror. But that's only has to do with the Internet, and you would still be able to get AM radio or – whatever your local radio is in your rental car driving home or whatever. But I wouldn't let the fear change your behavior. At the same time, our enemy is not flying long distances. I mean, one particular rabbit in Europe, I think he flew to the UK, but that's no big deal. I mean, they're certainly not flying to war zones or flying far away in Asia or anything like that, but I wouldn't let it dictate my behavior. But that's my personal policy. You're asking me if I'm traveling. I'm not traveling anywhere far, outside the confines of within America. And I'm not really worried about traveling anywhere far in America, because I can turn around and drive back by the time anyone knows what's going on. I mean, right now in America, we're at 5 wars. And you can still go to your local bar and whatnot. Most people don't even know about it. I mean, there are actually 5 wars. There are 4 with 5 countries. The president, it sounds like they even want to impeach him. I don't know if they will or whatever, but they're talking about him being a violation of War Powers Act. Well, plenty of presidents have been. This president makes it a little more blatant, and things are speeding up. So, am I concerned? Yeah, I'm not flying to Asia. I'm not flying to Mexico. Of course, I never fly to Mexico anyways. No offense to white rabbits in Mexico. If you can survive there and be white, that's fantastic. I don't know if I can. I wouldn't want to have to drive back from there, I guess you could say. But within North America, within Canada or U.S. or Europe, there's nothing for you. Don't buy into the fear porn. Don't let it dictate you. One morning you'll get up and something will have tripped and you'll know. And, you know, if you're on a business trip in California and all hell breaks loose, you just get in a car and drive back across. And things are already getting a little more crazy. And there's several different reasons for that. It's just a time on the calendar where things can get a little dicey. But don't let the fear porn, which is what they would have in mind for Europe or white countries, it would be control the airwaves, control the Internet, control, you know, you'd be getting IMs from the president about what's occurring, and you'll just take in a stride. Of course, that's speculation. That's ahead of the fact. Who knows? You know, I mean, there can always be some crazy something or other that happens that knocks everything out of a block. But traveling doesn't really scare me. What would scare me is if I were in some war zone or some, let's say I were in Japan and I couldn't get home. Well, obviously, if you got family and whatnot, that's a concern. Unless you're on business and have to be there. You know, if you don't have to be, I don't have to actually fly on a vacation to Mexico, so I ain't. I don't have to fly on a vacation far, far away, so I ain't. You know, in America and Europe and even in Russia, there's all kinds of places you can go to within so many hours of drive. You know, you can drive home, or you could, worst case scenario, if you get caught on a flight, you can drive back or get on a train or something. That's not end of the world stuff. It's just kind of common sense. So to answer your question, like, traveling doesn't scare me. In America, I think flying becomes a big pain anymore. Sometimes you go on these long flights within America and you're better off driving by the time you get through all the nonsense at the airport, because if you're driving, you don't have to deal with anyone's nonsense except whatever the kids are doing in the car or whatever. You know, that nonsense becomes becomes something fantastic compared to the nonsense you can go through at certain airports. So I sit neither here nor there, but don't let the fear porn keep you from rearranging your life. But I wouldn't hesitate to travel somewhere. What I would hesitate doing is traveling somewhere where I couldn't drive home if something happened. And like I said, even in the worst case scenario, by the time the planet realizes what's going on, you probably could drive all the way across the country. That's how most people are generally are in their own little worlds, are worried about, in Europe, they're worried about the local football match, local soccer teams, in America, it's the local whatever happened to the NBA or what Hugh Hefner's doing. We're looking at a little bit different game, and we're always on a consistent message, aren't we? That's the whole objective. But this stuff is getting really crazy, the different memes they're coming out to, the stuff that they're talking about doing. And this is the first time I've seen someone like the Russians come out with something crazy. But it doesn't tell me that it's going to happen the way we think it's going to happen. It does tell me that Putin may have made a deal, and he would only make a deal if someone's going to jump off a cliff. Because once you jump off a cliff, you're not coming back. Now, what that means for the rest of us, I don't know. They are also building a lot of bunkers in Russia, building a lot of nuclear bunkers, 5,000 underground bomb shelters. But they had to do a great deal of repairs to some old ones, and Russia actually cares about its citizens. They have bomb shelters all over the world. China's building them. Everyone builds them. America has built them all over the place. They just don't build them for us. Yeah, they don't build them for white rabbits. Yeah, but the Europeans, the Swiss have enough bomb shelters to put all the Swiss underground for quite a while, which is pretty amazing. In America, they don't really care about white rabbits. Yeah, I don't know about Australia or anywhere else, but that is very commonplace. Governments in Brazil has underground bunkers for citizenships. They probably don't care about the ghettos in Brazil, but that is common. So I don't know if I would get all panicked over that. Russia has been doing a lot of military spending. They've been catching up because a lot started deteriorating there. And they had a lot of underground bunkers from the nuclear age, from the the Cold War. And so what they're doing is upgrading those, improving those, and whatnot. And it's just intelligent to do. You have to do it based on someone's capabilities. And the capabilities are for, there's a lot of different power players on this planet, like Pakistan and China and whatnot, that have nukes. And you don't know what will happen. So you have to do that based on possibilities, not based on probabilities. So that's why Russia's doing that. I don't know that they're building bunkers because of some comet. I don't buy that. I don't buy some end of the world deal or some extinction event. But anything can happen. I think there's a lot of games, and it is what I call in-game exotica. All these different groups are jockeying, think they have a new world order. In the end, one group is getting ready to go for a new world order. They won't have it. They won't have it at all. But that is what's going on. That's what's going on with all the different crazy machinations, people getting busted over this, and big-name celebrities getting busted, congressmen. And they're always doing something stupid to get busted anyways. Big Jews at the IMF getting smacked. These are inner fighting among different fractions, generally speaking, of our enemy, as they get ready to go. But that's another story for another day. Now, do I think it would go that route? I have no idea. I have no idea, like I said. You don't know anything what these idiots are going to do until they do it. One morning, I'm guessing you could probably double it, be at war with 10 countries, and still walk into some places in America, Europe, and maybe even Mongolia or somewhere like that, and the average person won't know it. Yeah, they're so used to America being at war, that they're at war with 10 countries and they don't know it. But eventually the chickens come home to roost. Eventually the chickens come home to roost. Eventually it falls to pieces or something big happens. But I don't know. The trend is there until it's not anymore, and we will keep this conversation alive. In the next little bit, I go into the symbolism of where the white rabbit comes from in Europe, and it's kind of an interesting piece. For 60-some podcasts, I've done a show called Horus Avengers Follow the White Rabbit, obviously. And the white rabbit is a funny symbol. I've sat back and watched different people talk about the symbolism of white rabbits. And one whole segment of my podcast knows all about it and knows all about its link to ancient Europe. The other segment is trying to figure it out. they haven't really figured out, which is kind of embarrassing to me, because they should know a lot about ancient Europe, but apparently they don't. Or some segments that email me don't. White rabbits go back a long, long ways in Europe. If you have little brown rabbits in your yard, they're kind of pests. Well, what it means is your wife's impatience are going to get mowed under. Yeah, those little buckskin cottontails all over North America, all over Europe, all over the British Isles. But they go back a long, long ways. Various different types of cottontails, these little buckskin rabbits. Now, in North America, you have some snowshoe hares. And snowshoe hares up in Canada, they turn white in the winter. Also in New Zealand, you have the New Zealand white rabbits, but those are modern. They're from like the early 1900s. Those were introduced there by Europeans, of course. And of course, if you're listening to this, everyone listening has seen a white rabbit because you go on YouTube and you see one, you see a house pet, or your buddy had one when he was little or whatnot. They're very common to see a white rabbit nowadays. In ancient Europe, it wasn't so. In fact, just 500 years ago, 600 years ago, wouldn't have been so. Even right now, no one listening to this, I'd say the odds are very low that you saw a white rabbit in a natural setting. Maybe you're listening to me in Tennessee or in Colorado. Got a lot of listeners in both places, or at least some. A lot by a podcast standard, I guess. And you're driving down the road and you see some rabbits and you see an actual white one. All those little cottontails run by your house or something, you see a white one. Well, that's a pretty rare event. In fact, that's statistically maybe once in a lifetime. You probably won't ever replicate that, if any of you have even seen one. Now, I've never seen a white rabbit in the wild. But seeing one, a white rabbit in the wild, was associated, considered a big deal in ancient Europe, in ancient lore and legend. And it was associated with all kinds of different superstitious stuff. And depending on who you listen to or what books you read about it or whatnot. But basically it's superstitious because it's such a statistically rare event. But they're generally associated with good luck. Something big's about to happen. Some would even say, some of the different superstitious elements would say, something divine is about to happen. And of course this comes out in Western civilization out of the UK, and a lot of these superstitions are based in the UK, where they have all kinds of rabbits, you know, mowing through the flowers. Nowadays in the UK, I don't even think they could shoot them. I don't think they could do anything to them without being put in jail. So you got rabbits probably going wild over these places. I know Australia, they were introduced there, and it's not a natural environment for these little buckskin rabbits, and like speckly brown rabbits all over the place, they just mow through everything, destroy everything. But anyways, white rabbits there's a lot of superstition involved with them, and there was an individual in the UK, Lewis Carroll, in 1865, the original edition of Alice Adventures in Wonderland. And of course, Alice sees a white rabbit, and something big happens to her. She goes to Wonderland, which I think is something big. And of course, you have the modern example where they brought out in The Matrix, where Neo sees the white rabbit tattoo, then something big happens to him, and that's also associated with something divine in The Matrix. He's considered their savior. But this has its roots in ancient Europe. It has its roots in ancient Europe, and based on some common sense. White rabbits in the wild, albino rabbits, whatever you want to call them, are statistically rare. You know, in North America, of course, we're not talking about the snowshoe hares that turn white. Those are not indigenous to Europe, to most of Europe. And if they are, that's a recent development, in my opinion. It has to be. But generally speaking, the type of rabbits you'd see in Tennessee or Colorado are similar to the rabbits you'd see in the UK or Germany. If you're an ancient German and you saw a white rabbit, it's generally associated with a good luck and something rare. It's just something rare in nature. But there's a whole lot of lore legends developed on them. And then you got the lucky rabbit foot, which supposedly, according to Wikipedia, goes back to 600 BC. But I'll bet it's a lot older than that, because this rabbit stuff is ancient. And rabbits in different cultures and different societies are associated with various different things like fertility and whatnot. But in Europe, seeing a white rabbit was a big, big, big deal. And of course, that led to all the different hybrid white rabbits that we see nowadays. And even if you were to have your neighbor's white rabbit released in the wild, the odds of it living very long are slim to none, for various different reasons. Rabbits don't live long in the wild anyways. The odds of it procreating and making more white rabbits are still slim. So even if you see a white rabbit that was born in captivity in the wild, it's still a pretty rare event. By and large, I'm not talking about one your neighbor has hopping around his backyard on a leash. I'm talking about, you know, one just seeing one that ended up being released somewhere. They're just a rare sight, and this led to the obvious superstitious. I don't know where it got its divine symbolism, but probably some ancient Celt or some ancient German was going to battle, some big warlord going to battle, and they saw a white rabbit hop across, and they thought the gods were telling them something, and it started a big urban legend. But there's been other big battles where famous leaders supposedly have seen white rabbits hop across their path, and it's been a symbol of something huge. But it's generally considered big events, very, very good luck, Something big's about to happen, depending on who you're talking to, something divine. Now, if I got any listeners that saw a white rabbit, you know, jump across a road in Colorado, and then you ended up hitting one of those Super Bowl lotteries or something, I want to know about it. But that's the type of thing they would be associated with in ancient times, you know. And if you're some ancient German warlord and you win some big war, what it'd be like hitting a lottery, because now you own another tribe and all kinds of other stuff. So, you know, it starts out as urban legend and escalates from that, but this is something that goes way back in Europe. It was made famous in Alice in Wonderland, but it goes way back, and it's based on a natural phenomenon, which most of us can see on YouTube, or maybe you know a friend that has one, because they're raised so much in all these different hybrid rabbits are raised, but in the wild, let's go back to 500 AD in ancient Europe, you're a German and you see a white rabbit, that'd be a pretty rare event. In fact, once in a lifetime event, seeing white rabbits. But that's that on the white rabbits. You know, a lot of people don't know where that comes from, and it has its roots in ancient Europe, and there are other cultures and societies that have their own stories about rabbits. But if you see one in the wild, well, maybe you're going to have a very, very good day, depending on how superstitious you are. But they are generally associated with good luck. And this has been another episode of Forest Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. We are now at the end of another episode of Forest Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all, as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. Thank you.